This week on the Canadian Tech Podcast, the Canadian Association of Chiefs of Police want your passwords, the federal government wants to know how you feel about cybersecurity, and Ford and Volvo are both going to sell fully autonomous cars by 2021. That's all next and more on the Canadian Tech Podcast.
Welcome to the Canadian Tech Podcast, episode 83, for Sunday, August 21st, 2016, sponsored by Oleo Digital Labs. My name is Stuart Clark.
And my name is Derek Silva.
Well, Derek, another week, getting slowly but surely closer to the fall, which will probably mean an Apple event, and I really don't mind, because the weather is really annoying. That's all I'm going to say on it, and yeah, it's too bloody hot, too bloody humid.
Yep, and I know. I know you feel that way, and that's fine. It's today. This afternoon got quite chilly compared to what it's been like lately. So,
oh, exactly.
Yeah,
but it was nice to actually sit out on my patio this morning and have a coffee without melting.
I'll
or you know,
that.
If I wanted a glass of water, I could just carve it out of the air.
It has been rather hot. I'm still not going to complain because I'll have 4 months of complaining coming up. So
well, there we go. You know what? I don't mind if it's warm. It's the humidity. So, mm-hmm. You know, lest I start getting even more hate mail or death threats or whatever. It's just the humidity. You can get rid of the humidity. I don't mind if it's warm.
So then why don't you live in like a dry spot like Vegas?
Well, because
other than
the work
being
there.
The U.S.,
yeah, you know what? No, but see, if I was going to live anywhere, it'd be like the North Wilds of Scotland or Iceland, maybe. You know, I actually don't mind it cool. But, you know, she who must be obeyed probably would have an issue with that. So,
well, anyway. You could get your e-residency for Estonia and, you know, start your march east.
There you go. I know. I'll have to, if I apply, do you think it'll help if I mention your name?
Probably not.
Probably, you know, we'll see.
Now, it might help if you mention the founders of Skype. They're from Estonia.
Okay. Well, there we go. Well, I do have dual citizenship now, so I can move back. You know, I
going
I
for
have,
triple.
I can go for triple. Carry three passports. You know, even get more suspicion when I arrive in the country. So,
yeah.
But that's another story. Anyway. We're going to move right on. Nice little segue, actually, security and all that.
Mm-hmm.
A very busy week in tech here. Our first topic is an article from Maclean's Magazines where the Canadian Association of Chiefs of Police, they want to know your passwords. So basically what they want to do is because, you know, the bad guys use encryption and occasionally they might hide. Activities. But there isn't a law in Canada that compels someone to provide their password to a police during an investigation. What do you think about this?
I think, frankly, things are more or less fine as is. I don't want a law, regardless of whether I'm a criminal or not, on the books stating that if the police demand it, just because they want it, that I have to hand over my password. That's one of the major reasons I've said before that even if I get a phone with a fingerprint reader on it, I'm probably not going to use it for this very reason. And this is exactly why, because I'm one of the good guys and I'm going dark. I've gone dark, as they call it, simply because I can, because I want to, because it's my communications, my information. It does not belong to anybody else, regardless of the mediums that it's traveling. I still need to do something about email, but that's a lot more difficult because then other people actually need to get on board with mm-hmm. encryption and decryption and all the rest. So, I am unsympathetic to the call from the Canadian Association of Chiefs of Police on this issue.
Right. And I think, you know, and as we've seen with stuff with the Patriot Act and stuff in the States, it can be used maliciously. It can be used for the wrong reasons. Mm-hmm. And as I've said before, I'd rather one bad guy gets through than a couple of good guys, you know, lose the rights and everything that we've come to expect here in Canada. The other thing, too, is if this happens, let's say this passes, how soon before we've seen software that, security software for your machine that if you type a certain other password in, it immediately wipes your machine. If you remember correctly, and again, the name of the software's gone right out of my head, but we've had encryption software before that you could actually set up, you know, that you would, you know, protect the USB key, but you could also have another password that if you were, as they worded it, you were under duress, you mm-hmm. could put this in, which would automatically either A, show fake data, or B, completely wipe the device. So yeah, I don't think this is going to help them too much. What's the difference between this and let's say I'm a criminal and I'm sending all my messages in code like they did during the war, mm-hmm. You're not going to be able to force me to, you know, reveal the encryption, the manual encryption key for that.
So, yeah, the cipher. And that's okay. That's like that. Mm-hmm. That's part of your job, police. Like, I'm sorry, but
exactly.
This is your job. Exactly. If you really think there's something on there, go get a warrant. If that is too much for you, then it can't be that important. You can't.
Well, and like, even with a warrant, this is what this thing's saying. It's like, you know, they want to basically say that we want to get a warrant. And I come to you and, you know, I say, Derek, I have a warrant. You have to type your password into your computer. So, yeah, and that's completely no. It's not going to happen. So hopefully, this sounds like it'll probably go all the way up to the Supreme Court, and hopefully our justices will, as they've done in the past, be smart about this and actually.
Sorry, what would go to the Supreme Court?
If this ever tried to pass, if this legal measure, if a government or provincial or federal government tried, I could see an appeal being launched. That's sure. what I'm saying. This is yes. People aren't just going to take this. Lying. So, no. I understand the challenges of policing and that, but guess what? Part of the thing about living in an open democracy and that for some things are a little bit tougher than they are in other cases. Okay. On a related topic, and I think this is kind of hilarious, the federal government, it's not like the same organization, but still the timing's interesting. Yes. Federal government's launching a public forum on cybersecurity and they're inviting the public. Of course, my first statement would be don't allow a law to be made that compels me to reveal my password.
Yeah, that would certainly be a good one. I don't know what else I'd want to say. I mean, some of the big ones right now would be power generation companies need a lot of help identifying. Yep. Risks, actually getting, having attacks simulated against their infrastructure and therefore figuring out where their weaknesses are, whether it's in the incident response itself or in vulnerabilities in their firewall or data leakage prevention tools or that sort of thing. We got to find those holes and we got to plug them right away. And unfortunately, it's probably going to be incumbent on some level of government, whether it's the federal or the provincial, to start telling major public good type corporations that they need to actually test the stuff. And you know, that means you got to hire a white hat hacking firm to actually test things out and show you what it's really going to be like if a black hat hacker tries to get in.
I wonder if they should also look at, you know, there should be some sort of fines or regulations or that, if a business allows that. Like, you know, we've already seen a little bit, but it really seems to be a slap on the wrist every time something like this happens. There's probably more damage to the company potentially in sales, but with all the data being online and our lives and stuff like this, you know, companies really need to, you know, spend some money, maybe take a slight hit on their profits or their CEO bonus this year, mm-hmm. and actually take this seriously. The other thing, too, is we've also got to work with other countries because just like the internet is not Canadian only, the internet is global. We need to get other people taking this seriously as well.
So you're actually going to provide some input in the forum, because now I'm thinking I really should.
Oh, probably. Yeah, I've already bookmarked it. So
okay.
I'll put my 5 eggs in. I don't know if they'll listen to me or not, but, you know.
Let's hope so.
Once in a while, people listen to me.
Well, about 60 recently.
Yeah, so there we go, you know, and I haven't had too many hate-filled emails, so that's not bad. So you gotta love it. Okay, this next one, I'm not sure if you found it or I found it, Open365. It's one of those things I started thinking about, and I'm going, how come this hasn't happened already? So this is basically Open365. It's made up of LibreOffice, C-File, KDE, basically it's like Google Docs or Office 365, so cloud-based, but using all open source software. It's actually very, very cool. I looked at the reviews and everything, and it's an interesting idea. Now, I just recently purchased Office 365, because that's what, I know, but again, you know, and this is one of the things we talk about here. You mentioned in the show notes about, you know, there's still some issues with a lot of these other programs, where there's still some people I deal with and stuff like that. I need Excel, I need Word, but this is something pretty impressive. I know you've been having a look at it.
Yeah, well, the reviewer actually said that he or she tried to open up a bunch of documents and they actually all rendered perfectly, which is rare in LibreOffice or OpenOffice before it. It seems that the level of conversion has gotten quite good recently. I'm sure that there are still the occasional issue here and there, but if it can handle 99% of people's use cases and formatting and that sort of thing perfectly, then that's really what 99% of the populace needs. So that's really, really, really good. I think my biggest complaint at this point would still be the design of the apps. They're still very, very Windows XP inspired, and it's based on Java, which doesn't help, I'm sure. The desktop versions are built with Java, which probably doesn't
which
help.
I'm not a fan of.
So at some point there's going to be need to be a major architecture change, because Java, for better or for worse, is on its way out over the next 5 to 10 years. But for the most part, just about anybody can certainly get by. I laughed when I saw that it was put together by the same team that did iOS, EYE, which is a web-based hosted desktop. So, you know, you log into a Windows or Mac looking interface on the web. I think you were able to download and host it yourself if you had the right server side libraries and scripts and stuff. So not really surprised, but I just hadn't seen the name iOS in a while. So that was kind of funny.
Yeah.
But if you don't want to pay $10 a month for Office 365 beyond the free version, and for some reason you hate Google, and there are certainly reasons not to like the company, then check out open365.io, and you might have just found your online document home. Oh, and it also includes GIMP, which is an open source Photoshop alternative. So
very good one. It also gives you 20 gig of data, which is 5 more than Google Drive.
Yes, it is.
The other interesting thing is, and again, this will be interesting, is that I know at my previous gig, we used Google Docs a lot, but there was a lot of stuff I realized afterwards that Google Docs couldn't do. So it'll be interesting to see how this compares. I'm trying to think certain things like table of contents, stuff like that. I was very surprised when I discovered it couldn't do it. So it'll be interesting to see if this will.
Yeah, the conditional formatting rules in Google Sheets are terrible. They're not nearly as robust in Microsoft Excel or Office Excel. So, that's one reason why I can't rely on Google Docs, certainly for work and even for some other things.
Exactly.
As things like it'll import fine, but you can't make new rules that are as complex as what Excel can do.
Exactly the situation I'm in. And, you know, these days I'm in a big corporation where they live and breathe MS Office. Mm-hmm. But I even find, you know, dealing with other people sometimes in other documents. So, yeah, that's the reason. But, no, I'll definitely give it a whirl just to try to see how it handles some of these other things. All right, moving on. Interesting story here from The Guardian. Password strength meters fail to spot easy to crack examples. Now, as you know, kids, Uncle Derek and Uncle Stuart have constantly nagged you about having complex passwords. Make it secure, make it long, et cetera, et cetera. The problem is some people use, on the surface, they appear to be complex, but they're not. Passwords like ABC123, Trust No One, NCC1701.
Geek cred on that one.
Yeah, exactly. A researcher basically took some open source password cracking software, John the Ripper. Mm-hmm. All five of them were broken in under a second. So, you know, it's got to be complex, but it's also can't be that obvious. So yeah. Nothing that's like, you know, pretty obvious like that. So the article is basically saying, you know, password strength meters, yeah, they will help you do a better password, but you also still got to use your brain, right?
Yeah. Well, and that's why I don't generate my own passwords. I let LastPass do it. And
exactly.
I always set them to, like 16 characters and up, sometimes higher.
Yep.
Usually 16 is enough.
Numbers, special characters.
Yeah. At least a few numbers. You can tell LastPass to use at least two numbers, at least five numbers, at least 20 numbers, whatever. There is certainly a law of diminishing returns beyond like 20 characters, I think, for your password. So that's one reason why 16 is enough. And then because I only have a duplicate password on a few sites that I need to know the password when I'm on the go. And currently I'm not paying $12 a year for $12 US for LastPass Mobile. With the exception of those few sites, but I have two-factor authentication on those other sites as well.
Right.
Yeah, it's LastPass has everything, and I have a ridiculous unique password on LastPass. Yeah. So
exactly.
Yeah,
living in a world where we didn't have to trust something like LastPass, but really, it's the lesser of two evils.
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely.
Exactly.
So, kids, it's just because you throw in a couple numbers into your password, if it still looks like trust no one, but with a one instead of O-N-E, that's not stronger. And unfortunately, these password strength meters are not catching things like that. So think for yourself.
Exactly. All right. Under thinking for ourselves.
I was going to say on the opposite end of thinking for yourself.
Thinking for yourself. I know. You see that? You see? You're getting good there. Okay. This is your story. I'm just going to give the title. Ford and Volvo both set to mass produce a completely self-driving car within 5 years.
Yes.
Go for it.
I'm going to be sleeping at the wheel in no time. Ford and Volvo are both aiming to put level 4 autonomous vehicles, as level 4 is defined by the SAE, on the road by 2021. To put that in context, the definition of level 4 automation is high automation and means that the driving mode specific performance by an automated driving system of all aspects of the dynamic driving task. It means it controls all these things, even if a human driver does not respond appropriately to a request to intervene, meaning it'll take over for you. And so ultimately you could be asleep. I'm not advocating for that. It will probably still be illegal. But regardless, if you fell asleep at the wheel, the car would actually just take over and do the driving for you. So Ford made their announcement, I think it was on Monday, at their Silicon Valley Research and Innovation Center. And to help them toward their self-imposed 2021 deadline, they have recently invested in LiDAR sensor maker Velodyne, which is very well known in the industry, a 3D mapping company called Civil Maps, It has actually acquired a machine vision company called SAIPS, or maybe SAPES, and they've also entered into a licensing agreement with Nirenberg Neuroscience. Now, while Ford intends to sell these to taxi or shuttle bus companies to start fleets, essentially, saying that the economics don't make sense for individuals to be buying them in 2021, it's actually essentially going it alone at this stage in terms of getting these vehicles to market. On the other hand, Uber and Volvo are testing modified XC90 SUVs on the streets of Pittsburgh at random. So customers hailing Uber cabs will occasionally see an XC90 arrive, and you're going to be given the option to take them up on the free ride if you right. agree to use the autonomous vehicle. So there's still going to be a driver in the XC90, of course, because it's currently required by law. They will actually still have their hands on the wheel, but they're not going to be actively steering the vehicle from what I've read. And of course, this is going to give Uber and Volvo great and plenty of real-life feedback in a terrain that is very, very different from where autonomous vehicles are normally tested out in Nevada and California. Pittsburgh, yes. Of course, actually gets snow. Imagine that. So well, hopefully this is going to pave the way.
I want to see them test this in London, Ontario. Yes. If it can handle London, Ontario drivers, then it's set.
If it can handle London and Montreal, they'll be set.
There you go, exactly. Those two? Yeah, the ideal test.
Yeah, so Volvo also says they'll have a level 4 autonomous vehicle for sale in 2021, likely targeted at fleets as well. And sources are saying that they're expecting BMW will also announce a similar goal shortly. So whoever told me recently, it's not going to be for like another 20 years, maybe 40 years before we see these things on the road. In your face.
Yeah. In your face. Yeah. Well, you know what? It's funny too, because they say within 5 years and they talk about 2021. Yeah, that's 5 years. You know, who would have thought, eh?
Yeah. I know. Like,
where does the time go?
My oldest son will be 12. Oh, perfect. He won't even need a driver's license. He could just hop in the car and it'll just take him wherever he needs to go.
It's funny you say that. I read a tweet today from someone saying, in 1916, 16-year-old kids didn't want to learn how to ride horses. You know, in 2021, they're not going to want to learn to drive cars.
Yeah, pretty much. You know,
I should have recorded who said it, but it was a good tweet exactly just for this. But mm-hmm. Yeah, I know. I still want to see. I'm fascinated about how do the logic to handle all the situations that, you know, a driver may encounter or stuff like that, like for truly autonomous. I know we're not there yet, but well, ultimately,
I think ultimately this, especially for Uber and Volvo, I anticipate there will be some sort of mechanism that will eventually ask the Uber driver, what should I do? In those very confusing situations, we've seen Google run into a couple of issues over the last 12 months where it wasn't being aggressive enough and therefore caused somebody to run into it from behind. Or, of course, a Tesla Model S couldn't see a lightly colored truck against I think it was a very gray sky that day, and therefore a gentleman actually lost his life because his Model S went right underneath
under the semi.
Over. Yeah. So, you know, there are certainly still situations where they're unique. And so you can't simply tell the car what to do, or the car can't tell itself what to do. But some of those situations, you know, humans cause every day. Like,
exactly.
The problem is that this is all still new. Yeah.
Yep.
The problem is that this is all still new and people are freaking out for, you know, rightly or wrongly. And ultimately, it's just like the transition from horses to cars, or from hand cranked cars to, combustion engines that start with a key in the ignition and things like that. Major technological leaps always cause backlash. This is not new. And you're no,
exactly
if you, even if you're a Luddite, you're going to be dragged kicking and screaming into a world where people are just end up being safer. Stuart?
Yep. Yeah.
Okay.
And this is why I think it's interesting. You know, we're not going to go too far off tangent here, but yes, it's interesting where we're going to have, you know, there's various cities looking at rapid transit. Mm-hmm. And there's a large core of people, at least here in London, are saying, you know, should we be looking at trains if the technology with autonomous vehicles is coming? Like, this may have been the conversation we needed to have 10, 20 years ago, where they may not be needed now because the technology's changed. So, it's coming soon. I'm really looking forward to
It's still a very different use of the roadway.
Very much.
I would certainly put that question out there. I have put that question out there. But ultimately, we're still going to, like, people are still going to be in cars. Even if there are less cars because of great ride sharing apps and things like that.
I agree. There's going to be people in cars. I'm saying that, you know, the idea of having a fixed tracks and stuff like that.
Sure, sure.
You know, do we truly need that now? That may have been this answer 30 years ago, and it lasts for so long. But again, as these things come in, you know, where we have the ability to, you know, that way you don't have to, you know, send feeder transit to these tracks and the rapid transit trains, that a whole new model will be created. So, yeah, it'll be interesting. I look forward to actually seeing one at some point, and I want to experience it. It'll be good to see.
Give me one.
All right.
I'll take it.
I still want a Porsche for the track, though.
That's fine. In other things that are happening over the next couple of years, Google is phasing out Chrome apps for Windows, Mac, and Linux. So 3 years ago, Google's Chromium team acknowledged that there were certain experiences that the web simply couldn't provide at the time. Things like working offline, sending notifications, or even connecting to hardware. So they launched Chrome apps to help bridge that gap. And while hundreds, if not thousands, of Chrome apps are now available across Linux, Mac, Windows, and Chrome OS, Google has decided that it's time to begin evolving away from the Chrome apps platform, including both packaged and hosted apps, where hosted apps were almost exclusively just links to the website for that app, like the Hootsuite app. So all types of Chrome apps are going to remain supported and maintained on Chrome OS for now, and future enhancements to that platform will only be released for Chrome OS devices. And finally, developers can continue to build Chrome apps or Android apps for Chrome OS, though they probably won't in the former. Why build Chrome apps at this point? So starting in late 2016, new Chrome apps are going to be available only to users on Chrome OS. Existing Chrome apps are going to remain accessible on all platforms, and developers can continue to update them. Again, they probably won't. In the second half of 2017, the Chrome Web Store will no longer show Chrome apps on Windows, Mac, and Linux. However, it will continue to surface extensions and themes. And then in early 2018, users on those platforms will no longer be able to load Chrome apps at all. And if you're wondering, what the heck is a Chrome app? I've got a couple of links to some examples in the show notes. One's called Carrot, which is a really great a text editor that's available as a Chrome app, which really just meant that the developer had to write it once, and it literally runs everywhere else as long as the user has Chrome. And Polar, which I actually have on my MacBook for work, or on a certain account for Chrome. And it's a pretty capable photo editor.
So guess what? You can say you were one of the 1%.
I am the 1% in this case.
Because I know, great show. I had to ask you to clarify this because I was trying to think of something, and I went, okay, I can see why, you know, 99% of people are. And then Derek says, yeah, I'm one of them, one of the 1% who are.
Yeah, well, like if you go to Chrome now and you load up a new tab, in the top left corner, underneath the back and forward buttons, you should have a button that says apps.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's it there. Those things. So I've got I've got all the Google Drive ones, Planetarium, Kindle Cloud Reader, Hootsuite, which I no longer use. Oh, Spark Chess 9. That's actually a really good chess game.
I use Feedly.
Oh, yeah. There you go. There's a Gmail offline one I have here. I still have the Wunderlist one installed. I don't use it anymore. I have the desktop app. I have one for Authy, which is a two-factor authentication system. CloudKite, can't remember what that does. The Room Styler 3D Planner, which I have never actually used. And HelloFax, which is actually a fax service I do, well, once or twice a month when I need to fax something.
Faxing, that's still a thing?
Yes, unfortunately.
I know. I'm joking. I know. We had it at my previous place. There's still a few places. Scary. Scary as can be. How about you just scan an email? You know, that's not secure. Can you send us a fax?
Yeah, because that's way more secure. Actually, what it usually is for a lot of people is faxes are legal. Like, that's covered under the law.
Go figure, right?
Email, in a lot of cases, is not. It is for, like, real estate now and things like that. But in a lot of other cases, for some stupid reason, it's not. So,
because
I can e-sign something.
Yeah, and because, you know, after all, instead of just printing and faxing it, or instead of printing something, forging a signature and faxing it, I print it out, I forge the signature, I just back in. What is the difference?
I have no idea.
Anyway, I digress. Okay, and this will not be digressing, but we're going to pause here for a word from our sponsor. And kids, guess what? Garrick's doing this one live tonight. One take Silva. That's what we call him here at the studio. How's that for pressure?
None whatsoever. We have been really busy at Olio as usual. I've actually been producing. We'd have a ton of inquiries lately on doing work for some folks, mostly local companies or local ish, which has been really nice. A lot of in person meetings, and but we are getting close right now to completion on that six-month-long project I've been referring to several times. Should be done in the next month and a half, I think. I'm kind of out of the loop on that one. It's being managed by somebody else, which is fine because it's a beast. We are ramping up planning and design on some other new projects, though, that are starting, including version 3 of a mobile app that we started developing late last year. I am close to landing a couple of new clients, hopefully this week or next at the latest. I've got a couple phone calls this week lined up to chat about some proposals I sent out last week. But I do absolutely still have time to chat about new challenges or projects people have. So please do not hesitate to call 226-785-0420 or email Derek@oliodigitallabs.com. Derek is spelled D-E-R-E-K and Olio is O-L-I-O, digitallabs.com. I say you can find out how Olio can help you develop the web or mobile app of your dreams.
There you go. And we thank them for their support of the Canadian Tech Podcast. Well done.
Thanks.
Was good. That was excellent. You should do more of those.
Oh, okay.
I'll have a word with your boss. That's fine. We'll take care of that for you.
No problem.
Okay. Next story. Intel will allow ARM chip makers to use their 10 nanometer manufacturing process.
Yeah.
So this is basically they're going to open up their newest chip factories to companies making these little mobile processors.
Right.
According to joint press releases from Intel and ARM. They're going to be able to manufacture them on, I guess, basically Intel's platform. I'm not a chip guy, so.
Well, it'll be, so, okay.
Go ahead.
So Intel is obviously famous for their x86 platform and, you know, and then extending that to the 64-bit architecture. ARM is a completely different chip platform. It's kind of like RISC and CISC back in the day.
Liken it to when the first Surface came out, remember? RT running ARM?
Yes.
And the Surface ran Intel.
Correct. And so they're not really compatible in any way. You have to write different code, or you at least have to compile it differently. But what this means is that, actually, what this does is open up Intel as a direct competitor to Qualcomm, Texas Instruments, Samsung, the other companies that actually manufacture the ARM-based CPUs that companies like Apple and Samsung and Qualcomm design. So ARM provides you with the design of the chip, But it's actually up to other individual companies like Qualcomm and Samsung and Texas Instruments to add their own components, write their own firmware, et cetera, and manufacture the chips themselves. Whereas Intel obviously does everything in-house from start to finish. And AMD used to do everything start to finish in-house, but no longer does. They sold off their plants to and spun out a company called Global Foundries that also competes with Intel and Qualcomm and Samsung and all the rest for chip building or chip manufacturing business. So yeah, that's actually what Intel has capitulated the mobile or smartphone and tablet markets essentially. The Atom platform works really well for laptops and things like that, not so well for tablets or phones, as we've seen, and they have practically no market share whatsoever in those markets. So it's a huge surprise in the sense that Intel is now willing to make chips for a market that they tried so hard to get into. And now they're like, forget it. We're done.
Can't beat them, join them.
Exactly. And so that's exactly what they're doing. So we could actually see Intel manufacturing Apple, well, not the next chips, but in a year or two, manufacturing iPhone and iPad chips, or manufacturing chips for HTC's phones, or even for Google's own design phones, which apparently are going to come this fall, or that sort of thing. So, yeah, this is huge. It should stem the losses of their mobile division that they've lost billions on over the last 5 years, and probably a good shot in the arm on the revenue instead.
Exactly. So, yeah, I don't have much more to say. It more or less makes sense. They've realized that sometimes it's not worth beating your head against the wall, but if you can make some money being a part of things, that's going to definitely.
Yeah.
All right. Our good friends at Mozilla. Mozilla makes things like Firefox and all sorts of good things like that. They want to change their branding, change their identity. So they've... they're basically looking at now, I believe there are seven. See, even the site render is bad. seven different design ideas, logo designs, and they're inviting the public to participate and say what they like. Just from me, my initial look at these, I'm not that impressed. There's one here I like called Choose Open, but the colors just, they remind me of either Flickr or something else, and I'm trying to think of what. To be honest, I know people like, you know, companies rebrand. I didn't really mind their old brand. It was kind of a classic to me. What do you think, Derek? Which one's your favorite?
They haven't really used the Godzilla-type creature in a while.
No,
right?
No, they
haven't. So that's out anyway. They've kind of tried to work it back into the eye concept, but it looks like the Eye of Sauron, so that's a bad idea.
Yeah, it's just it looks very rude and crude, and there's a couple of these are just like, what the heck are they thinking?
Yeah, the connector is just so messy. It works really well for like multiple country brandings. That part's cool. But otherwise, it looks like a mess. I personally really like the open button and the impossible M. And if you actually go through each individual pitch themselves, if you scroll down, you can actually click on each individual one. They walk you through the design. They show you all the different use cases. I think those two could really, really work, either one of them. The button, the open button, the one you mentioned that you like, works really, really well. The pictograms that they've got, that they've conceptualized, are good. Not great, but good, and certainly heading in the right direction. But I really like the colors and the overall feel. I know you don't, of the impossible M.
You know what? Now that I'm actually drilling down, like the actual M, the main impossible M there, looks very, very old. But some of the individual ones, like for Mozfest, Grow, Hive, stuff like that, especially if they kept them in like black and white, they didn't change the colors for everything, I could see that now. But yeah, just, you know, it's just, I look at the M, and again, people will look at it, and it just reminds me of like, you know, with the first versions of Mac Paint and Microsoft Paint,
where
you could like fill stuff in with either color or like some, you know, little pretty graphics. Or whatnot. So
yeah, I hear you.
Yeah, it's just, I don't know. That's just me. But again, we'll have to see what happens. But yeah, definitely, if you get a chance, go and have a look at these. And they want you to have a say, which is always good. I kind of like that idea. All right. Next, YouTube and Canadian. Who are they? The CMRRAA.
The Canadian Music Reproduction Rights Agency.
Okay. All right. On the show notes, you had mechanical. I was trying to figure that out.
Oh, I copied it. I don't know if I copied and pasted. But anyway, yeah, sorry. That's right. The Canadian Music Reproduction Rights Agency. They have struck a deal with YouTube, allowing the CMRRA to license copies of audiovisual content made by YouTube in the process of delivering that content to users. If you didn't get that, that means each time content is reproduced by YouTube or its users, so is the music used in the content. So essentially, this is possibly another revenue stream for the CMRRA, which is an organization that includes all three major music publishers. And they will now be able to collect royalties on YouTube advertising revenue and subscription revenues on any services YouTube brings to Canada. So that opens the door to YouTube launching their YouTube Red service here in Canada, which offers an ad-free YouTube experience. And down in the US, they actually package that with Google Play Music. So for $10 a month US, you get both ad-free music through Google Play Music and ad-free YouTube. So if they do that here, I'm on board. I will have Netflix, I will have Google Play Music and YouTube Red, and I should be happier than a clam.
Yeah. And one thing I'm just wondering about, because I've started playing with some YouTube videos, and even though I don't have thousands and thousands of subscribers, you know, for a lot of people, they make a living or a pretty healthy extra income based on ad clicks and stuff like that. So, you know, I'd love to know, and I doubt YouTube's going to release this information, you know, how much of a hit that gets, where before you have a certain percentage of your people viewing your videos or clicking on ads and you get a revenue, but, and you know, what percentage of these people are deciding to go with YouTube Red for the ad-free model? My other thing would be is, would we see truly unlimited Google Music up here in Canada? What do you think?
Well, what do you mean by unlimited?
Well, sorry, just, you know, Google Music in Canada, where you'll be able to, you know, do a completely, you know, open thing. Because, you know, we know what it's like with rights holders and stuff like that, getting the industry players.
Oh, with the rights. Well, Google Play Music, the ad-free version is already available here in Canada.
Okay.
So I've debated subscribing several times. I haven't yet, but the more I go to the gym and want my workouts to no longer be interrupted by an ad right in the middle of, you know, squatting 222 pounds or something like that, the more I'm willing to pay the $10 a month it costs to just keep that music pumping. So YouTube Red would really just be icing on the cake, because there are times where I just want to show a friend or my wife a really funny video, and of course, it's like, okay, come watch. Or like my 7-year-old, and oh yeah, hang on, there's a commercial first. And it just kind of ruins it. Like,
exactly.
A friend of mine posted a video of her telling her, at the time, boyfriend, now husband. Oh shoot, sorry, I'm trying to plug in my laptop. It's gonna die. She has a video on YouTube of her telling her husband that they were going to have twins, and that video has gotten a little over 200,000 views, she said, and in return, she has gotten a check for $104. So that's not...
not much.
Much, yeah. I mean, 200,000 views, that's a lot of views. Was an ad seen every time? I don't know. Obviously, an ad wasn't clicked every time. No. So, you know, yeah, it would be really nice to know whether she would net out positive, negative, or about the same if a certain percentage of those users had YouTube Red.
Exactly. It's just, again, one of those things. I'm a data geek sometimes, so it'd be interesting to see the stats there, because, you know, it's funny. In some ways, they're trying to promote that on one way, and on the other hand, they're trying to find, you know, they're trying to have their cake and eat it too, maybe.
Of course.
That's the way I'm trying to word it.
They're an internet company. Moving on. Of course they are.
Of course they are. Of course they are. Anyway, a couple of quick hits. This one kind of disappoints me. BlackBerry, you know, they haven't been doing too well. So they're now going down the road of some other companies. They're starting to file some patent infringement suits against some companies. What do you think about this?
Well, I know that they sued Avaya recently, and now they're suing Blue, which is an American company based out of Florida, for patent infringement relating to cellular connectivity and some smartphone user interface elements. Yes, it's disappointing. No, it's not really surprising. I mean, if it's really, really obvious, at some point you actually need to defend your patents. Otherwise, they're useless, right? And you went through the whole process of researching the technology or the design and then spending the money to patent it in the first place. And if said patent was awarded, well, you actually need to defend them, or else the courts in the U.S. will actually eventually say, well, you haven't enforced it up until now, so we're gonna revoke the patent. That's not good for them either. But yeah, it's certainly not ideal behavior.
No, and the CEO John Chen, he has apparently been quoted saying, you know, he will turn to patent litigation to boost the company's bottom line. And again, that's not, you know, when I think of that, I think of SEO and stuff like that. It's like, it's not the way a company you're supposed to be making money. It's unfortunate, but there you go. Yes. He later added, during the company's recent Q1 2017 earnings call, quote, many people have wanted to buy patents, but I'm not really in a patent selling mode. I'm in a patent licensing mode. You know, he's got to be careful there, because, you know, they may hold some patents, but if companies realize they're not willing to, BlackBerry's not willing to pay, they may go invent their own thing or something like that. And then, then BlackBerry's like the saying, going, hey, I've got the ball. Anyone want to play?
Well, and that's why they're going after smaller companies like Blue, who probably has very few patents, if any. And Avaya, I don't think, has very many, certainly not here in Canada. Or probably the U.S., because I'm pretty sure it's a European company. So any of their patents would be filed almost certainly overseas. So that's probably the major reason why they're going after companies like that, is they don't have a huge patent portfolio to come back on. BlackBerry with.
But again, kind of unfortunate. I'll let you do this next one, because I know nothing about this.
So Ecobee is a Canadian company that makes very cool connected thermostats. One of the things that separates their Ecobee 3 connected thermostat from a lot of other ones and pretty much everybody else on the market is that they actually have remote sensors. So for those few rooms in your house that are either way colder than the rest of the house or way warmer than the rest of the house, I've got both of those. You can actually put remote sensors in those rooms, and I'm not sure exactly what Ecobee does with that data, but almost certainly they use that data to help try to even out the temperature across the house, instead of just waiting until your main room with the main thermostat hits 23, 24 degrees or what have you, and then finally kicks in the AC. Meanwhile, it's like 26, 27 up in your bedroom, for instance. They've raised $35 million from the Amazon Alexa Fund, Tom Vest, and Relay Ventures recently. So that'll put a little bit more money in their war chest and keep building on the success they've had so far.
Good for them. We wish them all the best.
Yeah.
Okay. I actually heard about this next one. Google Duel. This is and they were likening it on another podcast as being a real simple way for your grandparents to get a hold of you. instead of using FaceTime or Skype. I like the thing it was said there, but apparently it's now available in Canada.
Yeah, it launched this week in the US and Canada at the same time. So mm-hmm. I've installed it on my phone. The one, it makes it really easy to find other people because it uses your phone number to identify you, which is actually really handy because then I don't have to go through the process of like, oh, which email address does this person have their iCloud account with and blah, blah, blah. Like FaceTime is great once you get it set up, but the setup is not as easy as it could be. Google Duo was stupidly simple.
Yeah, this is a version one product. Let's keep that in mind.
FaceTime is?
No, the Duo.
No, I'm referring to FaceTime not being as easy to set up as it could be. Google Duo was actually really simple to set up. I put in my phone number that I wanted associated. It sent me a text with a number to confirm because I have an Android phone and everything else. It actually could automatically authenticate because it's like, oh, you got the text message we just sent you. Here's the code. So it actually did everything for me, which was weird, but also really, really smooth at the same time.
Yeah.
And then any contacts in my contact list that also have Google Duo, I see them already. And there was already like 6 or 7 in there. And I think I'm up to about 20 some people now that have Google Duo installed. So now I actually just need to call somebody.
Well, there you go. Well, I'm gonna actually probably put it in tonight or tomorrow into my iPhone. We'll see how that. But yeah, no, I like the concept. I might also get it for my mom. Even more likely when she gets decent internet out there, which now we're hearing is 2 months away, but that's another story.
And we also heard this week that it should. So right now it only does video calls one-on-one, much like FaceTime. But it is supposed to be supporting audio only calls soon as well. Giving you one more way to not rack up roaming charges and things like that if you can find like a Wi-Fi hotspot.
So. Right. Now here's one advantage to owning an Android device. You won't often hear me say that. the Android version with Knock Knock enabled, when a contact calls you're able to view a live video preview of the individual string. So if your buddy who's drunk again needs a ride from downtown or something, you can just, oops, I didn't get the call. But Apple doesn't do that because they don't allow Apple does not allow third-party devs access to the iPhone lock screen. So there
did
we
they
go.
Even give their first-party devs access to the lock screen? Like, why can't you do that in FaceTime? I mean, like, I think it's a great feature. And it's not... And so if I'm calling you, I don't see your video. You only see mine. I'm the one who instigated the call. Right. You can see my video without answering. And so I'm calling you. Of course, I'm going to be in whatever state I want to be already. So people were like, oh, well, what if I'm like getting out of the shower? Then don't call yet. Put a towel on. Or maybe you're in a couple and that doesn't matter. You're in a relationship and that doesn't matter. Like there are, and ultimately you can turn it off. If you want to turn it off, you can turn it off. So I don't get the privacy issues there. I mean, you're making a video call. That's what the service, that's what the app is for.
And you can choose to answer any call. That's what people forget. Yes. You know, you are not a slave to the phone.
No, absolutely not.
Exactly. So, anyway. But yeah, no, I'm definitely going to try installing that, and we'll give that a try. Okay, moving on to our local story. There's a new franchise in town, Driver's Seat. It allows customers to use an app to hire drivers. Now, this isn't like Uber. What you're doing is you're hiring a driver to drive your vehicle. So a little bit like these companies like Keys Please and that. There would be these companies you'd have a few drinks. Yeah, and you'd basically go and two people would show up. One would drive you and your car home so you weren't behind the wheel intoxicated. But yeah, this idea is, it's a franchise. It's been in other areas. Glenn and Dana Clark has launched the London franchise on August 1st. It looks pretty cool. It allows you to use an app on the phone to hire a uniformed professional driver for a variety of services, including airport transport, a safe trip home if you've been drinking, or a chauffeur for elderly people who no longer drive. How many people times do you see some monster Cadillac or Buick on the road with a little old lady or a little old guy who's way too short for the thing? You know, but they still want to use use, yeah, use, they still want to use their vehicle.
Yeah.
You know, I think this is a good idea. You know, I don't know why they just didn't call it Driving Miss Daisy Part 2.
Oh, I was just thinking about Driving Miss Daisy. Yeah, like, I want to be Miss Daisy.
I know.
I want a chauffeur.
I know. You want a chauffeur. There you go. You know, hey, how often, you know, and now if there's drivers who are working for this company, if there's a driver named James, he's going to be the most popular. Because how often do we want to say home James?
Oh, I was thinking more like Jeeves or Alfred.
Yeah, any one of those.
Yeah.
So yeah, if I had to work for this company, I'd rename. I'd get my name changed just while I was doing this. So absolutely. Yeah, I think this is awesome.
And develop a British accent.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. Yeah. Any other comments on this? On this one?
Nope. I think it's cool. I hope they succeed. It doesn't really conflict necessarily with any existing businesses. Yes, they offer airport transport and that sort of thing. But again, it's with your car. So if you are inclined to get to Pearson in your car or even to London Airport in your car, you are already less inclined to use a Robert Q or even a Checker Cab type service in the first place, because obviously you want to use your car. So yeah, I think it's really neat that, you know, slightly competitive, but targeting a slightly different audience than others, type companies are popping up and you know, using newer technology to their advantage.
Right, right, exactly. So yeah, good for them. We wish them all the best.
And in case you're skeptical, drivers have to be at least 25 years old, because that's when your magical driving talent comes in the mail. And and they have to undergo a criminal background check, and they have to have a clean driving record. So you are not going to end up with some random person in the car driving.
Hey, dude, how's it going? Wow.
Hey, man. Nice car.
How fast does this car go?
Yeah. Oh, nice Audi, man. No, you should be fine.
No.
Should be.
Yeah.
Exactly. Not my problem. And it's ultimately up to your insurance company whether this is okay or not.
Exactly. Okay. We're turning on to our regular feature, stuff we like. As many of you know, I've started a new job for London Life. And part of the thing I do is server management and backups and stuff like that. And you'll be surprised sometimes how often clients will fail because they don't have enough space to do images and stuff like that. Well, they use a product, and it's something I've actually been using for years too, where you imagine sometimes you're on your, you know, this is for Windows, but you're on your machine. You're going, how the hell did I run out of this much hard drive space? Well, have no fear. TreeSize Free and Pro can come to your rescue. This is a neat little thing. It'll scan your drive, including network drives with drive letters, and it'll show you exactly what directories are taking up a lot of space. There's actually a lot of similar programs. Grand Perspective is a good one I use for the Mac, but TreeSize is one I've been using for years. It's a really good one. The free one's adequate for most people's needs. Pro offers a lot of extra neat features, but it's just, yeah, it's one of those things that once in a while when you need it, it makes it really handy so you can see exactly what's going on. I've actually used it sometimes. Instead of doing a compare, I'll just roughly run this on two directories just to get a rough idea of the size. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it basically, in a tree format, it'll say, okay, this entire folder takes up 98 gig, and then this folder takes up this one takes up 56. Yeah. And you can go in there and see maybe some log files or stuff like that. You know, there's times in the Linux world I wish I had something as easy as this. I know sometimes I've had to nag the good friends at CleverHost that some of my sites sometimes get some large directories and they have to run this manually. But yeah, this works really well. I really like it.
Df-h is a great command.
Exactly. Over to you, sir.
So, short story. Last October, I went and bought a bunch of things, spent almost $100 on Amazon US.
Okay.
Because, driven by the fact that a decently reviewed, good-looking Wi-Fi security camera was on for like half price. And so I bought a bunch of things, and I was a couple weeks later, I was going to go across the border and go pick them up at Port Huron, only to realize my passport had expired. That was a problem. And
that could be a problem.
And we didn't really have another reason, other reason to go, and neither did my wife or anything like that. So months and months and months go by. I've since gotten my passport renewed, and earlier this week, the company I used to store my stuff in the U.S. called Kinek, K-I-N-E-K, said, "Hey, it's been over 3 months. If you don't come get it like ASAP, or tell us you're coming to get it ASAP, we're gonna like get rid of everything you've ordered." I'm like, "Oh, no, I have things in there I need." It's not even just the money; it's just like one-time things that I can't get another deal on again. So I took the whole family to the U.S. yesterday for a couple hours, and I finally picked up my iZone Stem Wi-Fi security camera, along with a couple other things, and I got it all set up last night, and it's working pretty well. I haven't enabled any noise or motion sensing alerts yet. Reason being, A, it's been the weekend. We're pretty much somebody's always home. B, well, the one annoyance I have is that it doesn't look like I can have it auto-sense that I have left the house, and therefore the noise and or motion sensor alerts should kick in. So that's a little annoying, but that's ultimately a software thing that I think they can fix. So I'm going to talk to them. But so far, so good. It is a very, very pretty device. I took a bunch of pictures. I'm going to write a full review on it. And I don't know where I'll put that yet. Probably on Canadian Tech Podcast and my personal blog and maybe a few other places. So far so good. Quality is good. The delay is very short. It's only like 2 seconds, and it's looking good. So I'm going to end up, it came with a 9-foot USB cable, which is amazing.
Holy cow.
Yes. And for power. So I'm going to end up pointing it outside my front door, to catch people trying to mess with my car or just, there's been a lot of problems in Kilworth lately, so hopefully I can help in a way, by getting some people on video if need be. But I've just got a little bit more vigilant lately, and so if this one goes well, I'm gonna invest a little bit more money into some decent Wi-Fi security cameras and put them around the house. I don't want to go all crazy like the guy who owns Stinson Security up the street, but
I think Auto Cannon or something. Shouldn't Auto Cannon help?
Auto what?
Or a tiger auto cannon or like a tiger pit?
I don't know what you're referring to. You,
well, you know, all, you know, all automatic gun.
Oh. Yeah, those would certainly help. If I want to also kill somebody. Oh, I think we've lost your audio. Okay, well, the show must go on, so I'll give you a minute to come back. On to what are we up to lately? So obviously I finally picked up that iZone Stem this week. I also got the free HMD virtual reality headset from a company called Tech Gear. I ordered this a couple months ago hoping it would not be vaporware, and lo and behold, it is not. So for the very great price, oh good, you're back. For the very great price of $0, I've got a Google Cardboard VR like headset. The one thing preventing it from actually working properly with Google Cardboard VR certified games and videos and stuff like that is the button on the headset that actually lets you tap whatever you're looking at on the screen. Now, to that end, Tech Gear does sell a separate Nintendo Wii nunchuck looking device, so I might have to pick up one of those. But for watching like 360 video on YouTube and Facebook and things like that so far, it's been great. And it's so, of course, my oldest kid loves it. He thinks it's the best thing since sliced bread. And so I've been trying to find some family friendly videos for him to watch, and thankfully there are quite a few. So so it's been pretty neat, and I've got a link here to the show note. They're still offering them for free, so you can get
pick one up.
You do have to pay for shipping, which I think was about $30, But shipping from China to Winnipeg and then Winnipeg to London for $30, or you know, out east to Nova Scotia or what have you, is pretty decent. So
yeah,
yeah, check that.
And it's both
check
Android and iOS.
It is, which rare. Yeah, actually, it's Windows Phone too. So for the 1% of you that have a Windows phone, I've got
our,
you
our one friend. Our yes. one friend in Kamoka.
Our one friend in Kamoka. Jamie, this one's all. Come on over. You can test it out.
Yeah, we'll have to mention it. And every time we mention him, I put a shout out to his Twitter account, and so I'm sure he listens just to hear what we're saying about him with his phones.
Exactly. Otherwise, I know I've mentioned this brand a few times. The IT department. I'm probably giving up on that. My heart just isn't in it. I just can't muster the energy required to really get it going. So.
And there's nothing wrong with that. You've only got so many hours in the day.
Yeah,
and you got
exactly. Yes.
Exactly. If you're going to do it, do something you want to do.
Yeah. So, however, I am going to push to get the new CleverHost site up this week. I really want to get that done. I'm helping Kathleen with a new venture of hers, which is super exciting. Cool. After that, I'll look forward to pushing forward to get SSL Cheap launched and offering super affordable SSL certificates in Canadian dollars, and then another new venture of my own after vacation that I know I'm super passionate about. I'm already.
When do you have time to sleep? When do you have time to sleep, pal?
I'll sleep when I'm dead.
Okay, just saying. The young, I tell you.
Yeah.
Now, so what even about hearing all this you're doing is making me tired, but I think it's awesome. No, it's good, good, good for you.
What about you?
Well, again, compared to what you're doing, not as much. Actually, this week I did a lot of patching and upgrades. There was a lot of WordPress updates lately. And most of my sites I pretty well keep up, but there's the odd test ones and that. So I was doing that.
Installatron can do that for you on CleverHost.
I realize that. But there's some other places I take care of that aren't yet on CleverHost. I keep trying to talk about that. So
what are you waiting for?
I know. If it was me, that'd be over there. But anyway, no. So I'm doing some stuff like that. And part of that includes finding a smoother way to do backups. Just looking at some of the different options between Dropbox I'm going to say OneCloud, the Microsoft's cloud one. God, isn't that terrible? Anyway, all the different cloud options to back up websites too. I'm also starting to play with Kodi, which is what you, XMVC thing you see people have on Android boxes. Mm-hmm. I'm actually playing with it just on a Windows box just to see what it does. We're doing some more unpacking. More training at work still into that model. And I'm also, some people know I build model kits for something non-technical. So I've actually been playing around doing some YouTube videos, just starting that on a separate channel. So that's been kind of fun. It's just to kind of, getting into some more video stuff. I've done the audio stuff for years. So just, here and there, just doing that. And, of course, looking forward to the cooler weather of fall. And if anyone didn't notice, I did get the Facebook page done.
Yes, it is, I did post a few things there.
I see that
this week. So yeah, I've been trying to do that, and I posted a few things to the Twitter account that we did not cover today, and that's by design. It's sometimes it's just like, oh, this is kind of cool, not really worth talking about on the podcast. So. Yeah,
exactly. So, definitely. So as we say, don't forget to, if you get us through iTunes, Google Play or whatever, please share and give us a review. Let us know what you think. We're quite happy to hear comments. As we were saying, we have a new page on Facebook. If you have a story idea you might think you like, you can always throw it there or send us an email at contact@canadiantechpodcast.ca. So I think that is about it for this week. That was a pretty full news show for mid-August.
Yeah, no kidding. Like that's rare.
Exactly. We know things are going to get busy. Yeah, there's an Apple event in September. I wish they were going to talk about iPad or MacBook Airs, but a separate MacBook event will be later on.
When is that again?
I believe I kept hearing the 7th of September.
Right.
They release date of the 23rd, but they don't tend to send the invites out till about a week or two before. So we should hopefully hear this week. But yeah, this will all be iPhone 7, possibly an iPad, something like that. But yeah, they've already said, the rumors are, we've already talked about this with the MacBooks, possibly a refresh of the MacBook Pro. I would really love a MacBook Air refresh, but I don't think we're going to get that. So
just don't forget. Yeah, just don't forget, I'm going to be on vacation like a couple days later after that. So you're going to need to find somebody to fill in.
Yeah, we're going to have to do that. Maybe I'll get, you know, everyone, the world's most interesting man and Apple fanboy. Maybe I'll see if I can get Derek Martin to join us.
Sure, why not?
He might be a good choice. Or we'll get our buddy Jameson. Or Mike again.
We had John.
Yeah, a good response. We'll see. Or John, there's all sorts. So yeah, we'll have to do that. So you'll have to just remind me in an email when you're away.
I will.
On that holiday, because I live on my calendar these days. I can't keep track of it all up in my little brain. So it keeps life a lot easier. So, all right.
I do the same. I live and die by my calendar. If it's not on my calendar, it either isn't happening or probably didn't happen.
And this is what I tell people. I say, get it out of your head, get it on paper. I'll even ask my wife, you know, if I'm on my way to bed and I don't have time to, or I'm too lazy to open the phone to put it in my task, I'll say, leave me a paper note in the morning if you want me to go get bread or something.
Yep.
That way I'll see it.
Yeah.
And that way I'll do it. So exactly. Okay. So for episode 83 of the Canadian Pet Tech Podcast for Sunday, August 21st, 2016, my name is Stuart Clark.
And my name is Derek Silva.
Thank you and be well.